Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.
You're listening to the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast, the show that proves no one stumbles upon success ever. With your host, Lou Need. Every Mondays and Thursdays, we deliver cold hard evidence behind the power of a robust morning routine. Get ready to be transformed by the renewal of your mind.
Hello, morning enthusiasts. Welcome to the Best Morning Routine Ever. Today, I have an incredible guest with me today. I have Sarah Long here, and she is a professor and actually United States history professor. In addition to teaching, Sarah remains active in the public history sector by participating and managing several projects. In 2019, she founded the Oral History Project and podcast called The Makeup Historian, and we will hear more about that later on today. She actually currently is drafting the master plan of developing for the Museum of Cosmetic History. She aspires to establish cosmetic history as a legitimate and respected scholarship focuses for future historians by providing them with properly preserved pieces of cosmetic heritage. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This is awesome.
Good to have you on board. What inspired you to be a history teacher?
You know, it's kind of random because I got into makeup when I was 18 and I was dead set on becoming a celebrity makeup artist. That's all I wanted to do. And long story short, my mom pretty much laughed and was like, no, you're going to college. So I went, I enrolled at a local community college and started knocking out the prereqs. And one of the first classes I ever took was United States history. And I absolutely fell in love with it. So I just kept taking more and more history classes and then eventually decided to go for my bachelor's and loved it so much, I went for a master's. So it kind of found me. I guess that's the best way that I could put it. It wasn't what I thought I would do with my career, but I absolutely enjoy every day. So it's a lot of fun.
That's fantastic. And I love your niche. It's cosmetic history. Tell us a little bit about that. And I'm pretty sure I'm not familiar with
it. Well, I mean, you're not alone. Not a lot of people are. And that's kind of the whole point of not only the podcast, but trying to get this museum off the ground. When I was in grad school, I tried studying cosmetic history or, tried to write papers about different facets of cosmetic history. And I could not find substantial primary and secondary sources. It was so difficult because most of cosmetics are perishable. They're not made to last really past 6 months. So trying to find one that had, remarkably or magically been preserved was really challenging. And I tried writing different books and different papers about it consistently and just kept coming up short. And then it kind of dawned on me, I was approaching the entire thing the wrong way and I was really trying to force a book to happen when it really wasn't, that wasn't my part kind of in the story. So I realized that what I was good at was facilitating and teaching and building things. So I decided to just give it a shot, and go for it. So that way, hopefully a historian 100 years from now or even 200 or something will actually have true primary and secondary sources to study cosmetic history. So I wasn't able to have it the way that I really wanted to, but I'm trying to use that as a learning opportunity and to create something amazing for future generations.
Yeah, absolutely. Your take on it is very unique because you're saying their life shelf is only 6 months. And that's I would say intentional by nature because it's a billion-dollar industry.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's and as I started drafting the plan for the museum, I realized that it's not just makeup. There are so many facets. There are so many different types of cosmetic industries. And, you know, and I think when we finally get the word out that a lot of people will become really passionate about it. I mean, we've already started getting things with like cosmetic surgery or tattoos. I mean, you know, the list goes on. There's hair care, there's body care, it's just so much. And then even collecting pieces from the chemistry side of cosmetics has been really fun. So in a weird way, I've ended up learning so much more about it than I ever anticipated, but that's also the fun of it.
Yeah. How far back does it go? Do you have a range, date range?
Well, in regards to United States history, we really start getting good, like tangible sources around the 1920s. That's really like as far back as we can, that we have a lot, I would say, of sources where we can get them from like the 1920s on. But we do have some sources that go back even farther than that. And they're not just in regards to the United States. We've been able to, in a weird way, I've been able to connect with other makeup enthusiasts who love collecting different facets of cosmetic history. And they have some really interesting and sometimes ancient pieces of cosmetic heritage that they would love to donate. We just need to create a place for them to put it. Mm-hmm. So it goes back really far. And that's the fun thing about makeup is it transcends time and transcends borders. So we've been able to connect with different museum professionals internationally. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm amazed to hear there's a whole slew of people out there doing the research on this. What is the goal, the objective of the research and the study? What are we trying to improve the makeup cosmetic industry? Or are you trying to just inform the public?
Well, there was a shift in historical scholarship within like the past 50-ish years where we kind of we're approaching historical study differently than we used to. It used to be we kind of looked at it from the top down, you know, like political, economic powerhouses, and then we would trickle our way down to the everyday realities. But now when we study societies, we're trying to do the exact opposite. We're trying to really understand the everyday realities of citizens within any nation. So my approach to that was, well, makeup is a really intimate aspect of most people's everyday routine. What if we kind of studied cosmetics as this thread that connected us throughout our everyday realities? And then historians also, I think sometimes people misunderstand us because we kind of work backwards. Historians let the sources tell them what perspectives were not recorded. So what stories and accounts need to be preserved or that haven't been preserved yet. So in a weird way, all of the different pieces of cosmetic heritage have really been telling me what story needs to be told. And I think that what's unique about it is that we kind of when we look at it, we realize we're not that different that we think we are and that we don't have to be so divided. So I think in regards to the current climate in America, that is definitely needed. We need something that unites us. And I think we underestimate the power of cosmetics and how they can actually do a lot of good for our society. So, you know, the plan for the museum is not only to preserve cosmetic heritage, but it's also to pay things forward to our community. So we would love to partner with other organizations and other nonprofits to give back to various issues, whether it's helping victims of domestic violence, helping our schools, you know, the list goes on. We really want to let the sources tell us where we need to go and what parts of our society need help.
Yeah, and it will be a great way to educate students and kids coming up on different cultures, because the gist of it, the main goal I'm hearing from you is to understand other people, understand other cultures and how we are interconnected in that way.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. And I think I don't know if it's because we're in the digital age and we are used to instant gratification that it's kind of ironic that in the age where we have more ways to communicate with one another, we're also becoming more divided than ever. And I'm not really sure what that means or how that is happening. But as a scholar, it's worrisome. And I'm trying to figure out how can I give back with my very random skill set? How can I actually put these two worlds to work and in a way that actually helps my community.
Yeah. And I agree with you. Even as an adjunct professor myself, I teach MBA courses, and I find it that traditional education is whittling away in a sense, because technology is kicking in. There's the need to learn for more core competencies and tailor the learning versus the traditional, let's go to a classroom, let's interact, let's engage, let's bounce ideas off each other, let's have an open discussion.
Yeah. No, I completely agree.
And so that's the shift with education right now. And I just like you, I'm not sure if it's a good or bad thing, because people will love tailored education and building on the mm-hmm. core competencies. But I think you're right when you say social media has also disengaged us. It works. It's supposed to work to keep us social, but I'm thinking it works too well.
Yeah.
Because there's a counter, a balance going on here.
Yeah. And there's actually throughout the podcast, I've been able to interview some really interesting people, and it's very in the beginning phases, but we're starting to notice that there's a decrease in the humanities. And we think that might be somehow connected to this disengagement within communities. So not having those soft skills that we get from different humanities fields it's kind of too early to tell, but we think it may be connected to kind of some of the major issues within our society.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Tell us about your morning routine.
My morning routine, huh? Let's see. Well, I make it a point to at least give myself about a good 30 minutes in the morning to just be mindful to myself and of my time. So I call it concepting, basically, where I like to write out literally on a piece of paper, like what my concept is for the day. And then I also really like to take a little bit of time on my skincare and just a little bit of makeup. It kind of depends on the day. But for me, it really is almost like a ritual in a sense, just kind of visualizing, writing out what I want the day to look like, what goals I would like to accomplish, and then also taking time to, you know, just on my own personal look. And I think it just makes me feel a lot stronger when I take those 30 minutes in the morning to kind of prepare myself mentally, physically for any challenges that the day has. I kind of tell myself, like, just roll with the punches, like create a flexible but comprehensive plan. And it's okay if everything doesn't go as you want it, but at least try to get as much as you can done.
That's very important, because there is a shift, because you think of morning routine, it's a new fad, right? It's a new thing that's happening. Morning routine, your routine used to be you get up, you wash your face, you brush your teeth, you put on your makeup, you put on your clothes, and you're out the door. But now it is an innate version of it, where you take care of the psyche, you take care of the mental, so that you are prepared to take on your day. You're prepared to show up, dress up, show up and be present in your life, in your day. And that enhance gives you a better quality of life.
Exactly. Yep. You took the words right out of my mouth.
Yeah. Tell us, how can we connect with you?
You can find me on my website, which is themakeuphistorian.com. And you can find all of the social media handles there. But the one that I am the most active on is Instagram. So there's my personal account, which is at Makeup Historian. And then there's also the handle for the podcast, which is at The Makeup Historian Show. So you can find me there. And the email is available on all of those different platforms, too. And yeah, I would love to hear from anyone who has any questions or would like to partner or network in any way.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing and coming on the show, Sarah.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, morning enthusiasts, that's it for today's show. Thank you for tuning in. If you love the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast, we'd love to hear from you. So go ahead and subscribe, rate, and give a review on iTunes or Google Play. While you're at it, tell a friend about the show. Be sure to visit bestmorningroutineever.com and our Facebook group to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover our fantastic free bonus content. Until next time.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.